Here's what's popping on today's episode.
Had a couple menti bees.
Mental breakdowns. It's literally not possible to have all 34 strengths in your top five. Like, that's not real.
But that's the thing. That perfectly illustrates how unrealistic perfectionism is, because it will tell you, well, you got to figure out a way to get 34 traits to be your top five. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Popping Perfectionism. We're excited you're here. We're excited to get going and start talking more about perfectionism in the workplace. And
when you said popping perfectionism, I was trying to figure out like a sign to do. Like, is that a P?
Be like, welcome to the welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Don't do that one.
Okay.
Oh, right. Okay. I was like, I just wanted to do like a cool, like, instead I just looked like an idiot. Welcome back.
Two female podcasters mysteriously killed after we freaking...
After creating gang songs.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, we're excited to have you guys here. We're excited to dig into today. We have a lot, like, seriously, so many good things to
talk about
today and give you guys today.
This episode of Popping Perfectionism is brought to you by Market Social. Run your event like a human being. Simple event marketing and management built on text messaging so you can reach your people. Check out their link in our show notes. And if you're enjoying this episode, pause the show now and give Popping Perfectionism a 5-star review.
Let's do some life updates.
What do you say?
Yeah.
Tell me about your life,
Anna. Tell the people what they want to know.
Go crazy.
Hi, first update. Matthew Rife liked our reel.
It's true.
So
they're engaged.
Here's what occurred is we posted a reel where I talked about me and Matt and how we are, as we all know, dating because I hugged his best friend. He saw that with his own eyes and said, like...
He watched it and was like I like that.
Honestly. He said, I like her. I have found out since then that he is cheating on me with his apparent girlfriend. No, I know. So
the audacity.
I would appreciate privacy at this time as Matt and I work through this together. But
have a public statement yet.
Yeah, we don't, but we will. But he and his so-called...
The announcements are still being printed.
They're still being printed. Ryan's working on them as we speak.
He's a multifaceted producer. But yeah, so exciting.
Also, some of the kickback on his post, though.
Oh, I know.
Because, like, I didn't know about the controversial things he said.
He's a controversial man right now, which I know that. And
I'm like, stand up for him, Anna.
I will admit that he has. But here's the thing is, like, and maybe it's because I'm like in the comedy world. So like, I know kind of how it goes. Like, you have to walk the line in comedy. And sometimes you walk on the wrong side of the line. And like, I'm not saying that like makes it okay for like what you've said. Cause I'm like, I do think some of his jokes were like a little bit too much.
Well, yeah. Cause it's like, if here's the line and it's like domestic violence. Not domestic violence.
Yeah.
He was like,
yeah, I'm he's going like, domestic. I'm going to swan like, dive to this side of the line. Like, yeah. Like, I will acknowledge, like, I'm like, not my favorite thing that he said. And when he like doubled down on it and like posted that link with like the special helmets, basically, like the, yeah.
Yeah. They're made called. The joke for like people with mental disabilities and retardation.
Yeah.
And
things like that. Like, not cool in my book.
No.
Not cool in my book. Have I also said some not cool things? Yeah. Has everyone said some not cool things? Yeah. So like, I'm not like trying to like just make him this person that can't make a mistake.
How do you feel about your image being tied to him, Anna? I'm getting you ready for the publicity that's coming your way.
Well, he should be worried because he's the one cheating on me.
That's true.
Just kidding. Duh. I don't know. I just feel like, I don't know.
He liked her reel.
He liked my reel, you guys. Okay. I just let me have this.
You have it. Take
Thank
it, sister.
You. Thank you. Oh,
what has the feedback been? If you can give us a little
bit. I just got some DMs. For the first time since we posted something, we lost followers.
We lost like 6 followers.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but
when you have only 500 right now.
We have less than 1,000 followers. 6 is a lot. Mm-hmm. But we lost followers, and then I got it because I reposted it on my personal. And I got a bunch of DMs where they're like, did you know what he said? Mm-hmm. And like, they would send me links to like articles and stuff. And they're like, not sure if you're aware of this. And I was like, no, I am. And I will be honest. I was very let down by his Netflix special. Not just like because his jokes, some of them were like, that one wasn't cool. I just didn't think it was funny, which was a real disappointment because all of his YouTube ones that he's self-produced, I love. It's like some of my favorite comedy that I've seen. So I was like really let down. So I was like, guys, listen, I get it, dude. I was disappointed. But you know what I'm not disappointed by? That he liked my reel. Okay.
Literally. And it's so funny because it's like, obviously they know you're joking, right? It's like, okay, we're joking that they're dating. And oh, like, whatever, yeah. Just exaggerating the situation.
Yeah.
It's not like, Anna, are you aware of what your boyfriend is saying in public? It's like,
yeah. Okay. But I think it's, again, that whole thing where they're like, you shouldn't even be like promoting him or like whatever. And I'm like, guys, just choose your battles. Like,
just let it
be. Just let it happen.
Yeah. But one could say that he was joking.
Yeah. That's, yeah. One, I know.
My opinion about it is that it's a mild joke that shouldn't have been at the beginning of his special.
Yeah, uh-huh. The timing of it also was unfortunate.
Also, Ryan is like in the comedy space very much, so he has credibility.
Very,
there.
Very in the comedy space.
I don't know. It was a gutsy move to make at the very beginning, but if you're going to do that, make it really good.
Or
make
really
it
a funny. Good joke. Right. Yeah, like make it funny.
One that you know is going to like land hard, you know?
Yes. And then I felt like it was like, yeah, I was like waiting for the rest of his special to kind of like
pick up or
make up for that kind of like justify that joke, and it just never did. Like it just got like, it was hard to watch.
That's rough.
Sorry, Matt, if you're watching this. He's not watching this. That's rough. But anyway, so that was first life update. I have something so funny. I talked on the last episode about how I ended a like situationship with a guy, and he is someone that I work with, which he's probably not going to listen to this, but if he is, what's up, homie?
You know who you are.
If you didn't want the airtime, then you should have acted differently. But anyway, he works with me. And I had one of my other coworkers ask me about my dating life. And I left, you know, names and everything out of it. I was like, oh, I just ended things with this guy. Because this guy that I was seeing stood me up or canceled last minute 6 times.
No, like hard.
6 times. And I was an idiot and like kept like entertaining it when I shouldn't have. But like, it just like just insane, and like stood up as in like we would set a time and a place, and I would ditch plans with other people, go all the way back home so I could meet him, and then he wouldn't message me back until like 2 a.m.
Okay, it doesn't make you an idiot for his bad behavior, though.
I know, but like I could have called it sooner. Anyway, so I'm telling this coworker about all of this, and he was like, "You are always dating like douchebags, like you're always dating all these losers, like when are we gonna find you a good guy, blah blah." I was like, I know. And then he literally says, I'll just call the guy that I was seeing Derek. He literally says, "Well, Anna, what about Derek? Have you ever thought about dating Derek? You guys would be such a good couple. He's such a good guy." Right after I had just, and so then I had to be like, dude, listen, the guy I goodbye. Just told you about was Derek.
Good bye.
Is that not insane?
No.
Oh, and so crazy. Like, and again, like I don't have any ill will towards Derek, but like we all have different priorities, and I obviously just wasn't a priority, and like that's fine, but he could have handled it better, you know?
Right. I wish you would have dug deeper with that coworker and been like, oh, that's so interesting, like why do you think Derek is so great? Tell me more about that.
I did more so he was like, you guys would be a good pair, and I was like, why do you say that? He's like, you guys just like have really similar personalities, you guys like want the same things, it seems like you're good at the same things, blah blah blah, and he kind of like hyped both of us up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, isn't that so ironically funny?
You should give it another shot.
Just kidding. Okay, text him right now.
Absolutely.
No, I won't. I wish him all the best, of course. We still work together. Like I really don't have any ill will towards him, because like it's just like a mismatch of priorities, right, and that's like totally fine, but I just thought that was so funny. Anyway, so That update, and I don't know if there's really anything else.
Give them the Survivor update, Anna. We're in the final four.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Yet, but we're going to
I don't think we've told. Ryan, have we talked
about? No, I was just going to say, you haven't really touched very much on the Survivor. I don't know what to call it, but it is the local Survivor stuff.
Yeah, it's like a Utah County. I think is it called Jake's Immunity?
It's Final Immunity is what he calls
it. Final Immunity. Mm. So not Survivor, but Final Immunity.
So he doesn't get sued.
By Jake.
Yeah.
And but it's like legit Survivor. Like we started off with 3 tribes of 6, and we've now dwindled to the final 6, like way past like the
merge.
So
we started with 18, and now we're down to 6.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we came into the merge with like, it was our tribe of 4, and then the other 2 tribes had 3 people each. So it was like a 6-on-4 situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we like swindled and wiggled and strategized our way into like keeping the majority of the votes. So it's now 4-on-2. Like our four.
We literally have flipped it. Yeah,
literally.
So our alliance of four that was up against 6 people is now still our alliance of four with 2 left. And we're just going to vote them off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy because Ryan, don't listen about this. It's like a spoiler for season 45. But it's already like aired and done. And so I'm just going
to. How am I not supposed to listen to
this? Yeah.
Just go for it.
We're basically the Reba four. Like, we're the Reba four who, like, made it all the way through this, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry, Ryan. I'll stop talking about it. You're good. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, so we're playing this fun Survivor thing and, like...
And, like, Alicia's pulled some, like, really cool moves. And, no, seriously, it's, like... And I've been the last tribal because of Alicia. She, like, designed all of this or, like, put all together where I had, like, what? Like, six or seven votes on me. Mm-hmm. But she, like... construed that and then had me play my idol, so then I was safe, and then we got someone else out, and then this last tribal there was 3 votes against me and 4 votes against the person that got out. So I've been like on the block like the last couple, but we've still been in control of it.
Well, and the vote before you, they literally blindsided all of us and I almost went home.
Oh,
like it was a tie vote, me against someone else.
Yes.
And luckily we like had our tribe at this like advantage and blah blah blah. But it's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's been way fun. So like that's been really cool.
Been way cool.
And had a couple mentee bees.
Mental breakdowns.
I just feel like it's like kind of that time of year. You know, like during the holidays where like everything you're happy about gets happier, but then everything you're sad about like gets sadder. Like it's just like more intense feelings around like everything you feel. Like if I'm like excited about Christmas, I get even more excited. But then if I'm like sad about other things, then I get more sad about them because it's just like the holidays.
Yeah.
So had a couple of those. Alicia and I literally before we were texting today and we're like, we got to like finalize stuff for the episode tonight. And she comes into my room. I'm literally crying on my floor. Mm-hmm. I'm like sitting on my floor, like trying to plan on the laptop, just crying. And she was like, do you want to talk? I was like, we don't have time. And so I just like suck up my tears. And then Alicia, like 5 minutes later, was like, I'm so anxious that I've been biting my thumbs and I'm bleeding. And I was like, what? And she was like, I need a Band-Aid. And
do you see the Band-Aid?
I'm literally crying on my floor. Alicia is bleeding from anxiety. She had just been crying in her car, which we'll get to with your life updates. But... just so you guys know, like, we're all going through it.
Do you
life
care
is
to
hard.
Share any of the hard, or do you want to keep that? I know it's raw. I know it's vulnerable.
You know what? But in that the spirit of practicing what we talk about, I will.
Okay.
I will.
Okay.
I know. This is a safe space. This is a safe space. It's only going out to the world. But no, I will just in the because we talk about connectionism and we're going to connect. And I do truly feel that like when I hear other people struggling with the same things I am, it almost normalizes it in a good way.
Of course,
yeah. And it's like, oh, if they're, like, having problems with that, it's totally okay that I am. And so
that's literally the definition of connectionism. It's all of the parts that make being a human so painful are the things that connect us together.
That we need.
It's literally, like, the lifeblood of connection. It's what you need to, like, maintain that pulse. It's like, oh, you're going through that sucky thing? Like, me too.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, wow, like, I can't believe she or he is, like, also struggling with that. So I just have a lot of, like, I'm very fortunate that I've never really had body image issues, like, with my actual body. I've never really cared what my body looks like, which I know as a woman is very lucky. Yeah, and I don't know how this is the case.
Yeah.
But when it comes to my physical looks with my face, I am not as secure. I just have a lot of body image issues with that, and it just, like, has been hitting a lot harder. There have just been some comments made, not on social, like, comments from my friends in real life.
To her face.
To my face. And just, like, past experiences with, like, different guys and, like, dating have happened and, like, bubbled up recently. And, like, it's just, like, a lot of things that, like, I constantly struggle with, like, body image issues with my face. But then when stuff like this comes up, it just, like, intensifies it.
Yeah.
And then it's also like, you know, the holidays, you always like want to be with someone, right? It's cuffing season for a reason. You want to like have someone, and like I don't right now. And so it's like being alone for Christmas and like New Year's like piles onto that too. And it's like, I don't know. It just like gets a little, it gets lonely and exhausting sometimes is the best way I can describe it. Where it's just like, I'm just tired. Like I'm tired of like worrying about what my face looks like all the time. I'm tired of like being alone. I'm tired of like all this stuff. And then like, on top of that, like putting energy into trying to not be alone or trying to look better is also exhausting, especially when it doesn't get the outcome that I'm like attached to or expecting, right? Like over and over again. And so it's just like a lot of that. And then like, I don't know, like the normal stuff about life that's hard, yeah. right? Just like being an adult. Mm-hmm. Like I'm so tired of being an adult.
I know.
Like I
miss when I was like 12 and I would go to soccer practice
yeah.
and do my homework and come home and play with my friends and
go to bed. That was a freaking dream, dude. I had no idea how good I had mm-hmm. it. None of us. I'm over it for real.
But you know what? I bet when we're like 40, we'd be like, dude, do you remember when we were 27? That was nice.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe don't not know, though. Maybe.
I don't know, dude. Maybe. We probably will for different reasons, right?
Yeah.
Because when you're like in your 20s, no one takes you seriously, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. Taylor Tomlinson, a comedian, she's like, the 20s are awesome because no one expects anything of you because you suck at everything.
Shoot, that's so humbling.
Right? Where it's like, oh, yeah. And so, like, I think we will miss, obviously, the 20s for, like, different reasons than right. we miss when we're younger. But I don't know, dude. It's like, this decade of life is, it's like, hard.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's hard to do alone. It's mm-hmm. hard to do by yourself, you know? And it, like... And being with someone is also hard, though. Like, relationships mm-hmm. are also hard. So, like, mm-hmm. it's just, like, different hearts. But, yeah. Anyway.
It is different hearts. And something I've been thinking a lot about lately is just, like, just because someone might have it worse than you in other ways doesn't invalidate your hard.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, yeah, it's still hard. Like, even though, like, Anna, you're sick of being lonely during the holidays and not having someone. Like, all of us want connection,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then in my experiences, it's been like, I've been through rough breakups. I've been through divorce. Like, I'm going through a rough situation right now and it sucks and it's hard and it's painful and it's like ripping me apart, it feels.
Yeah.
But it's like the complete opposite thing is painful for you.
Yeah.
So it's like, we can't avoid pain. We can't avoid this. No,
right? Yeah, we can't.
No matter how much you try, no matter how much you want to. So it's just like something that I heard recently, and I know it like resonates with me, not so much with you, Anna, but they said, if you wake up in the morning and you're alive, that means God isn't done yet creating you. Like, he's not done molding you. He's not done building you. Like, you woke up alive. Like, keep going, keep moving. Like, there are still things to do. There's still like connections to be made. There's still mm-hmm. a lot to accomplish, to learn. And so I just like really love and hold on to that, you
yeah
know?
I like that a lot. And I also, one that does help me and I relate to a lot more because I feel it on the flip side of this, is like, there are people who are praying for your problems, like for the problems that you have, because like Oof. I'm here, right, where I'm like, oh, I don't have anyone for Christmas, and like I'm sad about that, and like that's like my problem mm-hmm. and there's some other girl who's in a very abusive marriage right now who's like, I have to get through Christmas with my abusive husband. I wish I could leave him, or I wish I was like, I wish I could do Christmas by myself.
Ouch.
You know? And so like realizing that like I'm praying for the thing that's causing her problem, and she's praying for the thing that I have my problem from, you know?
Yes. And even the parts of your life that are going well, it's like, for comedy, for example, that you do, or even our podcast.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, I wish so bad I could do that. Or I wish so bad I had the confidence to do that. Or I just knew, like, mm-hmm. where to try. Like, oh, they yeah. can. Like, you know.
Yeah. So, like, someone who, like, has someone for Christmas, right? They're mm-hmm. like, oh, but I wish I could get on a stage. Or I wish mm-hmm. I could do a podcast. Or I wish what. Mm-hmm. Like, we just all have different problems. And I know that. But I also know with that, all of our problems feel very intense to all of us. And yeah. very personal, as they should.
No, yeah. and again, it doesn't, like, invalidate your experience. Because yeah. your experience is real. And I think if you're living this, and if your pain, like, is alive in you, it's bound to be alive in someone else.
Yeah.
And like being open with what you're experiencing can help someone find that connection, or maybe find that hope that like they're not alone, like someone else understands.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I literally feel like I'm the only one going through this. And again, like every situation is different, but I commend you for being open. Like, it's hard. Thank you. It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
But one thing I think a lot about too, through struggles, is like, it's just expanding us. And it's expanding, like, our capacity to relate to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the saying that says, no one wants to be comforted by someone who's never known discomfort. And I love that so much, because it's like, oh, you know pain, Anna. You know loneliness.
Yeah.
So you now, like, have that credibility in a way to comfort someone else who's lonely.
I'm finally a subject matter expert.
You are.
Is that what it's called? Subject matter. Yeah, subject matter expert.
I mean, it sounds right to me. Yeah. Like,
yeah, and I always say, like, if it exists in you, it exists in someone else. For anything. Well, like, mm-hmm. whether, because I know we've talked about, like, in dating, it's like, are we expecting too much? Are we being too picky, right? Like, are we expecting something in someone that's not realistic? But it's like, no, I'm expecting that in someone because I do that or I have that. And if it exists in me, it exists in someone else. Like, I'm already evidence that it is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And I agree with what you said, where it can be with pain too, where it's like, this isn't singular to me. I'm mm-hmm. not the only one. I'm the only one feeling this pain as uniquely as I am, but I'm not the only one feeling this pain. This and there's pain. Other people who've had, you know, because I've at least had like flings and like, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. And there's other people who like have, you know, it's that manageability perspective we've talked about that you talk about a lot.
Yeah, I don't think they know what it is.
It can always be worse and it can always be better. Mm-hmm. Whatever situation you're in, it can always be worse and it can always be better. And it's like that makes it more manageable yeah. mentally. So
because it's like I can manage what I've got on my plate. Because if you think about what someone else has on their plate and how much worse it might be in their situation, it's like, oh, no, I'll take mine. Thank you very much. You know?
Yeah. 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 And then realizing also that like someone else also has it better, which also can like give you hope that it like.
Should we share the five forms of perspective?
I think we freaking
should. Since we're talking about it.
Yeah.
So the first, these forms of perspective, I can't even remember where they came from. They didn't come from me. I learned this. Do you want to look it up? Actually, should we look it up? Yeah, super yeah. quick. Okay, we're going to look it up. But I learned it when I was in the mentor program from an advisor. His name is Mike Jensen. And he taught us about the five forms of perspective. It was like in some older textbook. Maybe you can find it. I can find it and reference it later. Or maybe like on our Instagram or something or in show notes or whatever. Basically, there's these five different ways to look at something to provide perspective. And perspective gives depth to a situation. It gives like some background. It gives context. It helps you see things from different angles. So the first one is manageability perspective, since you just said that. It's that your situation is neither the best nor worst, which just helps you manage what you've got. The second one is commonplace perspective, and that means that whatever you're going through or experiencing happens regularly to many, many, many people. It's like, me going through divorce isn't like unique to me as a person. I'm not the only person in the world who's been divorced or who has gone through a breakup or who has broken a pinky toe or like all these things. Anna, you're not the only one that is longing for a partner. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of helps you realize you're not alone in this struggle of humanity. The third one is...
I'm trying to find
time perspective. Yep. And that is that eventually everything will end. Everything comes to an end. Maybe it's that. You can try and look it up.
I did it. The link did not help. Only that is there.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. But I know them off the top of my head.
She's a subject matter expert, this one.
So that's our intelligent laugh. But time perspective is that eventually everything will come to an end. And something I tell myself, especially on super hard days, is like at the end of the day, my head can hit the pillow and this day will end and I can go to bed.
Mm, yeah.
I'm like, I don't need to think about tomorrow. I don't need to think about any other day. Like, today will end and I can get through today. And I just really like that. And that no feeling is permanent. No feeling or thought or anything like that. Like, they're so temporary. They're so fleeting.
Yeah.
So it's like whatever you're feeling and going through right now, it will end. It won't last forever. The fourth one is improvement perspective. And that is that no matter what situation you're in, there's something you can do about it. There's something that can be done, even if it's as simple as like reaching out for help to like a friend, or if it's going on a walk to clear your mind, or if it's drinking water, or if it's having a confrontation, or if it's changing an attitude or something. There's like something you can do. And I love that because it helps you feel
control.
Yeah. I don't even want to say control, but it's like you have power.
Yeah.
Like, you are not a slave to your problems. You're not a victim of it. You can, like, do something.
Yeah.
You can be a creator, like that creator mindset.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the last one is unpredictability perspective. And that is that no situation is known, ever. Like, you cannot predict what's going to happen tomorrow. I can't predict, honestly, what is even going to happen in this episode that we've planned.
Mm-hmm.
It's like life is just so unpredictable. I got married and I like didn't plan on my marriage ending, but I got divorced. you know?
Yeah.
It's like you can't plan out every situation. Life is so unpredictable. And that just helps you surrender to that concept and surrender to planning everything, because no situation is known.
Yeah. And we really like to fortune tell, right? Mm-hmm. Especially as perfectionists, because we want everything to go perfectly and right. We want us to be perfect, every situation to be perfect. So we do a lot of worst case scenario thinking, where it's like, you know, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? How do I prevent that? What else could happen? How am I going to prevent that? Blah, blah, blah. Just realizing that, like, even the best planned situation could go mm-hmm. awry in a way that you didn't even think of. Mm-hmm. And so it is so helpful to think of that, because then you can let go.
Yep.
A lot, where it's like, okay, I can't control everything.
No. And if you're even doing things right, they still can be painful.
Yes.
Like, divorce was what's right for me and my ex-husband. That was the best thing for both of us. But did that make it easy? Hell no.
Yeah.
Like, it was hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And doing something perfectly isn't going to prevent you from feeling pain from it. Doing your divorce perfectly was not going to stop you from feeling the pain of divorce.
No, and that's not even real. Like, that's how do you not, do it? Yeah. What?
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, and we just think it does. Like, we mm-hmm. think if we do something perfectly, it will block us, right, from those, like, negative emotions. And it's like, no. Mm-hmm. You have to feel the pain.
Yeah. We've just been talking about these five forms of perspective a lot, because one of my good friends is going through divorce. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why I've also been reflecting a lot on my divorce. And divorce is great. Congratulations to everyone getting divorced. Congratulations. I need to say that. It's not like a, I'm so sorry. You'll get over this. And you will. But anyway, just congrats. Yeah. I'm helping someone through that. And so it's so fun to, like, be on the other side and be like, you can do it. You know? Oh, sorry. Hit the mic. Anyway, so that's why we've been talking about these five forms of perspective a lot.
Yeesh.
But updates in my life. Yes, I made my finger bleed. I do that a lot out of anxiety. I like pick my fingers. So that's kind of cute. I'm not like other girls.
Just kidding. I'm not like other girls. I'm worse.
I'm way worse. Just kidding. Tony, I did share about his leg break, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So he broke his leg, got surgery. He's recovering just fine. He's doing super good. I love him. Just also struggles. Mm-hmm. Lots of tears, lots of problems when it comes to romantic relationships. And I'm approaching another end of a relationship, but new beginnings. And it's just hard to, like, grieve, you know? Grief is hard. Mm-hmm. And grieving, like, love and someone that you care about so deeply.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm ready to talk about it past that, because I don't want to cry.
It's a little fresh.
Yeah, I'm like, oh yeah. I feel him coming. The lights are making it worse. Anyway, so yeah, just making it through, a little bit in survival mode, but, like, we're here, we're getting through. The holidays will be a great break, but also just an interesting time of year to, like, be with family and to think of things you're grateful for, but then just be like, rats, my situation is not the best right now.
Dang it.
Mm-hmm. It's not what I anticipated. That's okay. It's like, got to let go of the expectations.
Yeah. That's a really big thing. Anyway. So today we're going to talk about professional development and mm-hmm. perfectionism.
Yes. And when we were planning for this episode, again, we just drew from articles and existing research on professional development. And I wanted to look into the actual word development, like that definition. Like, what does that even mean? And on Google, it says development is the process of developing or being developed. Okay. So what's a synonym for developed, right?
I hate when the definition of words use the word to define it.
I know. I'm like, okay, thanks. It makes me crazy. That makes no sense. Yeah. So synonyms for development are evolution, growth, expansion, enlargement, building out, blooming, which I thought was a cute one. Mm. And so with all of those words, like, development in any form requires you to admit that there is room for growth. There is room for expansion. There is space for improvement, for enlargement, for all of those things that I just said. So it literally requires you to acknowledge or identify that you lack something.
Mm.
And that there's something you can do about that thing.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like, it's a positive thing. But perfectionism does not like to admit that there's room for change or growth, because, again, it exposes that weakness It exposes the concept that, like, you are not complete. There is room for improvement. There is room for change. And the definition of perfect is without fault. Or sorry, these are synonyms for perfect. Without fault, whole, complete, flawless, and faultless. So I think that's just a good, like, pace to set this episode, that professional development requires you to fight perfectionism so hard, because development and perfectionism are the exact opposite.
Literally the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And perfectionism doesn't want you to acknowledge that there is room for growth or room for development, because then you have to admit that you are flawed. You mm-hmm. are faulted. You are not complete.
Yes.
And that's why we have a shield up, right? Mm-hmm. Is to prevent that from being acknowledged.
And something I want to point out is saying, like, without fault, whole or complete or whatever, like, those are really kind of positive words, I think. It's like, oh, complete and whole. Perfectionism isn't bad, right? Like, I am whole. I am complete. But then there's the words like flawless and faultless. And I think that's what we like to identify with perfectionism, mm-hmm. is that's like, oh, I'm faultless. Like, I'm perfect. But when you have that mindset about perfectionism, then it's like, oh, development must be a negative thing then, right? Yeah. But look at how positive those words are. Blooming. That's adorable. Like, what if we called it professional blooming? That's so cute.
Cute.
For some reason, that makes me think of, like, the maturation program, though, which I don't love. I hated that experience. Professional enlargement, growth, expansion, like, all of that is so positive, but perfectionism wants to tell you that it's, like, a negative thing.
Yeah.
But we have so many articles and professionals to back up that this is a positive thing. And perfectionism is something that is directly impacting your professional blooming and development.
Negatively, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because if you, like, it's the whole concept of being found out, right?
Right.
You don't want to be found out that you're not perfect, or that you're not competent all the time, or that mm-hmm. you're not good at your job all the time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you, like you just said, if you're looking to develop yourself, then that has to be true first.
Right.
You have to have parts of yourself that aren't developed, parts of yourself that are weak, that are flawed. And it's like, you don't want to get found out. That's like why perfectionism hides everything. It's because you don't want to be found out that you are those things.
Yeah, the imposter.
But you are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So silly.
We're funny. So the first article we're going to dig into is from Forbes.com. You could find it. And it's titled, Perfectionism is Bad for Your Career. Three most important things to know. And it is by Dr. Tracy Brower.
And isn't that weird? Isn't that a hard last name to say? Brower. Brower. I always want to say Bauer or like...
Brower. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Brower.
But she's a senior contributor at Forbes magazine and Forbes.com. And she has a little bio that says, I write about happiness, work-life fulfillment, and the future of work. So, Anna, do you want to take us through the first few paragraphs? We're just like going to kind of read through main points and add our commentary and insight.
Through the article and we're like, we have to include everything she's saying. Like, mm-hmm. she's literally spot on with everything she was saying. So her first paragraph right out of the gate says, you've heard it before. You shouldn't let perfection get in the way of progress, but you also want to excel at work, and perfection may seem like the best pathway for career growth, which we know perfectionism is appealing for a reason, mm-hmm. right? But perfection can be a barrier to getting ahead in some surprising ways. It is to your advantage to let go of the pursuit of perfection and find ways to be excellent without being ideal.
So good.
So that whole concept of finding ways to be excellent, mm-hmm. but without being ideal, is like the whole basis of perfectionism and why it's bad, and how to pursue excellence without trying to pursue being flawless or mm-hmm. faultless or perfect.
Yeah, and she does touch on this like double-edged sword of how perfectionism does help you achieve a lot.
Yeah.
But it actually is hindering progress. So we'll touch on that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Her second paragraph says, if you try to be perfect, you're in good company. Welcome. Hi. A study of over 41,000 people published in Psychology Bulletin found perfectionism has increased over time, partly because of the comparisons people do with each other on social media, and partly because of the competitive environments that colleagues and employers are increasingly creating. So the workplace is getting harder. It's getting more competitive. It's like there's more comparison. There's more perfectionists. There's more of these shields coming up. But I think that means there's also a lot of room for growth and opportunity and connection. But it's just like, it's hard to share the limelight, you know? We don't want to do that.
And it's scary to be the person to pop that balloon, right? Because we've talked about the analogy of the balloons, right? That's what are the basis of our entire podcast name, Popping Perfectionism. And the analogy is that perfectionism is this balloon that we just keep pumping with air and it keeps getting bigger and bigger, separating us from other people, creating tension, right? All this stuff. It is so scary to be the person in the workplace, the first one to pop that, right? And to be the one to say, I don't feel qualified in what I'm doing right now, or I don't feel like I measure up to my other coworkers, or like, you know, like just starting the dialogue behind that can be like so scary. But when you pop that balloon, you give other people permission to pop theirs, or at least like let the air out a little bit. But yeah, it is just getting more and more intense in the workplace, the competitiveness and all of that.
Something I just thought about with the balloon analogy is like, if you're holding a big balloon and it's just expanding and expanding and expanding, and everyone surrounding you is also expanding in their like perfectionist identity, their shield, their whatever we call it, there's like less room for people because you're pushing them further and further away. But when you start popping them, it's like, oh, you can fit more bodies in. Yeah. Like there's more room. There's more room for people. Like your arms can like extend and embrace people and be like, oh, welcome. Welcome to the crew of development and change and expanding and striving for excellence. I like that she said that. Like you can strive for excellence without being like the ideal. Is that what she said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Without being the ideal. It's like no one is going to be the perfect thing.
Yeah. No. And when those balloons are all popped, you also can see each other again. Right. If there's a balloon in front of you that's big enough, it's going to prevent you from seeing people in front of you and seeing people around you. And so it gives room for more people to be there and also for you to like actually see other people again, rather than just focused on yourself and your image and everything all the time. Because, no, I mean, definitely. I would even dare say these balloons are reflective. I would even dare say that they're you're just staring at yourself in the reflection of them.
Oh, yeah.
While they get bigger, you know?
No question.
So, yeah. Anyway, so next paragraph that she talks about, this one I really love. She brings in a study at the end of it. She said, some aspects of perfectionism, setting high standards, working towards goals toward goals proactively can be good for your career, but perfectionism has a significant downside.
Addition really, really quick.
Yeah.
Keep in mind the two dimensions of perfectionism. This is the cycle, like this is the most basic cycle of perfectionism, if y'all remember from season one, which is unrealistic expectations and self-criticism. So then you set higher expectations, you don't meet them, you criticize yourself, you fall. So she like sheds light on this. She basically supports everything we're saying.
Yeah, because she talks about setting those high standards and those goals that are unrealistic.
Yeah,
you're not going to reach them, or you're not going to reach them in exactly how you envisioned reaching them, and you're going to beat yourself up. Yeah. But perfectionism has a significant downside. Obsessing about making mistakes or letting others down or holding yourself to impossibly high standards can have negative consequences. According to research examining 43 different studies over 20 years, which is a lot of studies.
And a lot of time.
Yeah, by York St. John University. Perfectionism is linked to burnout as well as depression, anxiety.
Oh, I know her.
And even mortality.
I'm curious to learn more about
that. That means how long you live. That like, means your life. Like, people die earlier if they're perfectionists.
Will that be on our tombstone?
Cause of death.
Cause of death.
Perfectionism. Dude, it's going to be, I swear.
It's taking another.
But yeah, so like, and outside of just like the mental health side effects that perfectionism has that's bad for you, it does all come back right to the fact that you can't connect with people when you're being a perfectionist. You just, they can't coexist trying to be perfect and trying to connect to someone. And so like your relationships suffer on top of your mental health and self-image suffering.
And I think it directly stops development again because of like the negative light that perfectionism shines on room for growth. And perfectionism says that that is fault. Like there is fault in this. It is not whole. It is flawed. It is wrong. But development says like, no, this is room for expansion. This is like the beginning. This is what you can build upon. So it just adds so much negativity to your doubt, like your humanity, your humanness, you know?
Yeah.
So then she digs into how perfectionism is like holding you back, right? Part of getting out of the perfectionist trap is understanding how it holds you back, of course. Here's what you need to know, blah, 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 blah. Okay, number one, this is like her headlines. This is what you need to know about perfectionism. Perfectionism is demotivating. And I'll actually just highlight this paragraph. I won't necessarily read it all. But she basically says that because you're striving for perfection, you're striving for something that is not realistic, it's gonna be impossible to achieve, which is gonna be so demotivating. And it's gonna like deflate your, like just deflate you completely. And you're just gonna realize like, I actually can't do this. I can't achieve perfect. Like I'm done trying. Mm-hmm. And I think perfectionism helps you to a certain point. This is the double-edged sword I was talking about. Perfectionism helps you achieve a lot because it's like, okay, I need to maintain this like unhuman, supernatural like image that I can do everything and I can achieve everything and I'm like the golden star employee or whatever. But then after a while, your expectations are going to get higher and higher and higher, or even just with time, it's impossible to maintain that level of perfection.
It's not sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable, and it's exhausting because it doesn't allow space for humanity. And so it actually creates a super not motivated, deflated, not excited employee and person. Like, how sad is that? How depressing is that?
Yeah. No, seriously. Because the thing about perfectionism is it has a shelf life. Mm-hmm. It's not sustainable. And sometimes that shelf life is long. We're, you know, I'm 27. You're going to be 27.
I sure am.
Soon. Yeah.
January 5th.
January 5th. Haha. And like, you like, how do I say it? Like you, it doesn't last for as long as we think it's going to. And when it falls hard. Mm-hmm. Right. And we've talked about that on previous episodes and previous seasons. But yeah, it always has an expiration date. It mm-hmm. always has an expiration date. And like, we're evidence of that because we've always been very high achieving, accomplished, obsessed people. And if you look back on our lives, you'll be like, oh my gosh, they've done, you know, cool things and they've done so many whatever. And it's like, yeah, we have. And yeah, perfectionism did help me get there. But like, at what cost?
You know what's funny too? No one cares.
And no one cares. And no one's literally thinking about that. Yeah.
No one cares. And like, when perfectionism expires and ends its shelf life, the person it hurts the most is you. Mm-hmm. And like, you're maintaining this image for who?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, we're thinking that it'll make us more lovable, more acceptable. It'll make us like, I don't know, it gives you that validation. It gives you that attention. It like fuels you. It's like addicting. Like, maybe I'm actually perfect. Maybe I can actually like achieve this.
Maybe I'm actually superhuman. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then it slowly gets more exhausting and more hard to maintain. And then you realize you can't do it. Your flaws are glaring. You have to like drop the shield. She says here that when you're down and disheartened, it's going to be tough to put your energy into anything. And so, and the person it hurts the most is you.
Including your work mm-hmm. and performance at your job.
Yeah. And like your relationships, which we've talked about, and your happiness.
Yeah.
But it literally affects job performance, you know?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And it just is this like really hard thing because you do see all of these redeeming outcomes from perfectionism, right? Like mm-hmm. you see the people that are perfectionists and they do get the praise at work and they do get, you know, the accomplishments and the achievements and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But again, you just have to know that if a person is operating in that mindset, that it has an expiration date. And the fallout from that is going to be much more costly than what it got them, mm-hmm. right? And like, I would never take away anything either of us have done or like achieved or whatever, right? Like, or any of our experiences that were yeah. backed or supported by perfectionism. But I do regret the relationships that suffered because of it and my own like self-esteem and self-image mm-hmm. and everything that like suffered at the hand of perfectionism.
Oh, amen, sister.
Yeah.
And it says here that you'll get farther if you embrace your limits and do your best, which I just think is so cute and easier said than done.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before, too. Your best is not going to look the same every day. Mm-hmm. And perfectionism doesn't care about circumstance. It doesn't care about situation. It doesn't care about anything that's happening in your life. It expects you to perform at your literal best, not just mm-hmm. your best of that day, at your best, a.k.a. flawless, a.k.a. perfect. Mm-hmm. every single day. It doesn't matter if you got in a car wreck this morning, like our producer Ryan.
Ryan did.
It doesn't matter if you're going through a breakup. It doesn't matter if whatever it is, it doesn't care. It doesn't care about any of that. And it expects you to perform at your best, at your perfect every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
it's not possible.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite bosses in the world, Kyle Reyes, I'll always mention him, which love he is going to be a guest on the podcast.
We so talked excited. To him
about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's such a good example of this. My current boss, Renelle Lewis, she's at UVU. She's amazing. But she like allows room for humanity in the work space and she understands limits. Here is what I mean by this. There is a coworker of mine who recently lost their father-in-law and there's another one who's struggling with like infertility and like tumors and stuff.
Holy.
And then there's also someone who has countless like autoimmune diseases. And, you know, I'm going through a really tough situation. And when you bring these things to light with her, she's just like, hey, do your best. Like take an extra hour today off, like go home early. Like she understands that there is a limit and it looks differently and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I love that because it just, when you add context to someone's situation, if I knew the work that like one of my coworkers, we'll call them Sarah. Let's say Sarah lost their father-in-law struggling with XYZ health issues. And she comes to work and she does like not the bare minimum, but she does what she's expected to do. It's just like, okay, Sarah just like does what she's expected to and leaves. But then when you know her situation, it's like, dang, she's going through a lot and she showed up today and like did her job.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Her second point is perfectionism distances you from others. And this is exactly what we were talking about, right?
Literally, just barely.
Literally exactly what we're talking about because it does. And in the workplace, this is really harmful because most of us spend most of our lives at our jobs, mm-hmm. right? If you're working a 9-to-5, that's 40 hours a week you are working with your coworkers. Some people see their coworkers more than they see their families.
Yeah, I would say a lot of times more than 40 hours a week. People work.
Yeah, people work.
Yeah, 50 is the new 40.
People don't know how to work anymore, no. Kim Kardashian. What was that quote from her? People just...
She's like, people don't know how to work anymore. She's like, just get off your ass and work.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, okay, Kim.
I'm like, shut Kim, up. Sweetie.
But also, I love her.
Yeah.
I'm like, Kim, I love you if you're listening.
Kim and Matt Rife are listening to this episode.
Could you imagine?
I would die. We'll just have to tag Kim in our next reel and then... We'll have made it, honestly. I think at that point we can just quit our day jobs.
No, that would become my entire personality. I'm not kidding. Okay, anyway, take it away.
Yeah. Anyway, so another drawback is it distances you from colleagues, right? People may not want to work with you because they sense your impossibly high expectations and know they won't measure up, which I think is a really unique perspective on perfectionism that I haven't considered a lot is that it makes you intimidating to people in a bad way.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone should ever dim who they are or what they do because it might intimidate or make someone else uncomfortable. But I do think perfectionism does it in a way that's not healthy and that is unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it can make other people, again, not want to work with you or work around you or make them feel like bad about themselves, discouraged about themselves. Or they want to avoid the overwork or overthinking, which becomes your hallmark. Ding, 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 right here. Mm-hmm. If you fall into the trap of believing you're close to perfect, you also run the risk of intimidating others who know they aren't all that. In addition, if you avoid admitting mistakes, you'll come across as inauthentic and people won't trust you because they know that your, what she calls Teflon exterior, isn't the real you. That is one that I think isn't talked about enough, mm-hmm. is that when you're a perfectionist, you are a chronic people pleaser. As Taylor Swift calls it, a pathological people pleaser.
Oh, dang.
Which hey, I Taylor. Love that term, and I can relate to it a lot, where you don't want to tell people what you're actually thinking, because if you say what you're thinking and you come across as rude to someone, they now think of you as rude, or you assume they think of you as rude, and then that self-image that you've worked so hard to protect crumbles.
Yeah, it's threatened.
It's threatened, mm-hmm. yeah. And so it's this whole, you know... I know people in my life, and I know I've been this person and am still sometimes, where I like them as a person, but I don't feel like my relationship with them is real. And I don't think I know the real them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this like very surface level connection with them.
Yeah.
Maybe not even strong enough to call a connection. It's a surface level dynamic with them.
Yeah. Relationship.
Relationship. Yeah. Cause it's still, you know, interaction, whatever you want to call it. And so all these things, being inauthentic, being unnecessarily intimidating or unproductively intimidating, being distant from other people. Like, these are all side effects of perfectionism.
And I think this really, really affects the leadership component in professional development, because it talks a lot about like intimidating people and people not wanting to work with you. It literally says that. It says people may not want to work with you because they sense your impossibly high expectations. They can sense that you don't allow space for humanity or slip-ups or whatever it might be. And they're like, I won't measure up to that. Mm-hmm. And like, even if I think I won't, like I have to try, which is so tiring. Yeah. And then again, it leads to like the burnout, the anxiety, the depression. So I just love this part for becoming a good leader in the workforce. And one quote that we love from, it was like an orientation leader or something at UVU. They said, being a good leader isn't about getting people to like you. It's about getting people to like themselves. Mm-hmm. And I love that because perfectionism is all about you. It's all about your image. It's all about what people think of you. It's all about what you're achieving. But connectionism, and I think true leadership, is about everyone else around you and helping them like themselves.
Yeah, and not in a people-pleasing way, right? Mm-hmm. Not like what other people are thinking about you, what they're thinking about themselves,
right?
And how to improve that.
Right. And I think of some of the worst leaders I've worked for and some of the best. And the best ones are the ones that I know are human. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, they've messed up too. They've made mistakes too. And my least favorite ones are ones who are just like, I'm sorry, why did you show up late for work today? Oh, you have depression? Okay, that's not real. Like, you, what is with this generation? You know,
they're so soft.
It's like, I woke up depressed and I, you know, put on my bootstraps and went and milked the cow at 4 a.m. It's just like, okay.
I woke up depressed and I chose not to. And then I went to work.
And then I decided to be happy.
Like a real man, like a real woman.
And obviously, like, we're exaggerating, but people who can, like, allow space for humanity and being approachable.
Yeah.
And all of my favorite leaders are the ones who do that. Yeah. And who admit, I think something it touched on here is, like, they admit that they're human. And so people will trust you more. Because it's, like, everyone knows they're not perfect. Everyone knows we're imperfect. So someone who, like, pretends to be and holds up that front, it's like, okay, you're literally lying to me. Like, you're a liar. Yeah,
yes.
Like, you're hiding something and I don't trust you. This might not have anything to do with it, but this is how I feel about people who like sushi. I've told you this, huh?
I like sushi.
Ryan, do you like sushi? Please don't say yes.
It depends on the on the kind of sushi you're talking about. But
oh, okay. He's being diplomatic.
But yes, I do.
Okay, so I don't like sushi very much.
Just sounds like we have the majority here.
But like when someone tells me they like sushi, I'm just like, you're literally lying to me. Like, I don't know what it is, but I'm like, dude, just be real. Like, no one likes it. I know it's like cool and bougie to like sushi, but no one does.
Alicia, I love sushi. I love it.
I don't get it. Why though?
It's good.
Why? Literally no one can tell me why. Why is it good?
It just like tastes good. The texture is nice. The
mushiness in your mouth. It's all mush.
No.
You know when you eat something and you're like, oh, that was good? That's what I feel.
One day. I think I can do like the fried rolls. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. But see, at that point.
Some people say that that's not real sushi, which is why I was so diplomatic on it. Because I do like the rolls and the fried stuff. But people are like, but that's not a real sushi. Those I agree with you. Those are the liars.
Okay. Yeah. The extremists. The sushi extremists. I would agree with that.
Like it still needs to be flopping around on the rice.
Yeah, with like a pulse.
But I like that sushi too.
Anna, no, you don't.
Where it's just raw fish on the rice.
You don't, though. What's it called? I'm literally like gaslighting you.
I'm being gaslit live right now.
I'm gaslighting you. I'm sorry. I'm so happy that you like it.
You're not. That's awesome. You're lying to me.
You're keeping them in business. Okay, one thing I do like is spam musubi. Has anyone heard of that?
That's literally like sushi, Alicia.
It's not because
it's on rice with seaweed.
But it's fried spam, which is delicious.
Okay, literally, you swap out one ingredient and it is the same as sushi. So I think you just don't like fish.
No, but I like fish.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I love a good salmon, halibut.
You just don't like salmon on rice with seaweed.
No, but I like grilled salmon or like, you know.
So you just don't like raw fish?
Yeah, wrapped in seaweed on rice.
But you like the Spam wrapped in seaweed on rice.
I don't know. Spam just is different. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. Basically, I don't trust people that like sushi because I feel like they're lying to me, you know? They're just like, oh, it's so good. You know what I'd like right now? Sushi. I'm like, I know you're just trying to sound fancy. Like, cut the crap, okay? Like, we just want McDonald's. I'm just kidding.
Okay. You're going to the wrong places.
I know.
I think that, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to roll it back. People who claim to be perfect, even if they don't say that explicitly, but they like maintain this image that they are perfect, they are flawless, they can, you know, do the grind every day, they can like excel every single day. It's like, oh, you can't? Like, I don't trust you though, because that's not real. Like, we all know that that's not real.
Yeah.
But people who maintain this front, it's kind of just like this, you know, in the office when they're like doing the gun pointing at each other, they're like, that's what it feels like. It's like, who's going to break first? Like, who's going to expose the fact that they're human first?
Yes. And I love right here, she says, you want to achieve the necessary balance where you have the professional courage to express where you need help and where you don't have everything figured out. Mm-hmm. That authenticity will deepen relationships and connections. So it's kind of that. It's like, who's going to pop their balloon first? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, we all know we're all fronting, right? Like, we all know that we don't all have it together, that probably no one in this workplace has it together.
No.
So who's going to admit it first? Who's going to pop their balloon first?
And I think what I love in here is that leaders do. Like, good leaders do.
Have it all together?
No. They pop the balloon first.
I was like, we need to go off air and talk about this. Defeats our entire message. Shoot. This is the end.
No, but I think, you know, when it comes to the workplace, sometimes the people I trust the most are the ones where you like ask a question. They're like, I don't know the answer to that, but let me get back to you.
Yeah.
Or they're just like, oh, that's a good question. Or like when you're new to a job and people are like, what do you think? You know, like, you have insight, you have knowledge, like, tell us. Just when they admit that they're like, I don't know this.
And they're teachable. Let's
figure it out together.
Yeah, that like they have room to expand and develop and that there might be someone else in the room that isn't weak in that area.
Yes. And you know what? I actually think that's more admirable than someone who's trying to be perfect, right?
Oh, yeah.
100%. It's like, wait, I actually look up to that so much more because I think that's harder.
Yeah.
I think that's harder to be like, oh, I don't know that actually. Or like, hey, I actually, I like don't have the capacity to do this. Can someone help me out with this one?
Yeah.
Or hey, can I delegate this to you? Or I think this is in your strengths. Could you take over this? You know?
You are the subject matter expert.
It's like, yeah. I look up to that so much more than someone who thinks they can handle it all. Because it's like, I don't even want to do that. That's hard. Like, that seems exhausting. I don't even know if I can achieve that. Yeah. I don't relate to that.
Oh, totally.
And I think it's harder to like admit that you do have room for growth and you do like need to, you don't have it all, you don't know everything, but like once you embrace that, there's like a workplace environment, there's a culture that you can create of just like connection and humanity and inspiration and collaboration and all these different things.
Yeah. And an environment where mistakes are not only tolerated, but they're expected,
encouraged.
Yeah. And that a company like that can be so much more flexible and adaptable and pivot so much easier, because people are willing to get past their mistakes faster. Because if you're in a perfectionist workplace, you make a mistake, you don't know something, you're going to try to work on it behind the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. So that people don't know you didn't know it, or they don't know that you messed up, and how much time that takes away from what you could be doing. You know, you could just open it up, talk about it, figure out how to fix it and move on, you know, take the blame, take the credit, whatever it is. But when you're in a perfectionist workplace and everyone's just trying to like keep their image up behind the scenes, that's such an ineffective workplace. And I mean, when you talk about, right, on paper, just like ROI from your employees, right? If you are a leader,
right,
you want employees who are going to be able to fumble and fumble quickly and figure it out fast. I played rugby at UVU. And
I still can't even imagine that.
I couldn't either. Well, no, I always loved rugby, but growing up. And so I actually did picture myself playing. But anyway, it is. I did play wing, which that's just the person that gets tackled all the time. I wasn't like this like huge, like, yeah. And so I was just like getting tackled constantly. But they told us all the time, our coaches told us all the time, they said, fail loudly. Before every practice, every run, every game, they said, fail loudly. If you're going to mess up, if you're going to, you know, break a rule, or like, if you're not sure, like, if you, because rugby has a lot of like complicated rules and stuff behind it, like, just fail as loudly as you can. Do not halfway fail.
Yeah.
And I loved that, because then in our practices, it was so cool because people would mess up and do things wrong, right? They'd throw the ball forward or like whatever it was. And like, we all learned from it together and we all picked up so much faster how to play well. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it was, you know, we were just halfway failing and we were trying to hide it and keep it covered, like we would have made so much less progress as a team.
Right.
And it just was, I've just taken that into like life and tried to apply it where it's like, just fail loudly and be okay with it and just fumble it and move on mm-hmm. quicker.
Totally. So. And then it allows everyone else to like do the same, you know? And I think once you get those like mistakes or failures out of the way, like the sooner you do that, the sooner you can progress and like build upon that. Yeah. Be like, oh, I learned this from this mistake. So now I can do this differently. And oh, like then I learned this. So now I can do this. It's like all building blocks. But when you don't allow room for those mistakes or like those attempts, those tries, those like doing something new, then you don't have much to build upon because you're not allowing any room for a mistake, mm-hmm. you know?
Oh, yeah.
Totally. I think that's so true with sports. I could talk about that for 10 hours straight.
Yeah, we should bring a sports expert on here. You know what? Dare I say we will.
She's like, myself.
We'll find some. No, not myself.
Just kidding.
But I think that'd be cool to dig into that. And because mm-hmm. there's so much psychology that goes into being on a sports team that is translated to a work.
Hey, you know team. What? Well, so when I worked at the Jazz, they have a sports psychologist like on retainer for all the employees. And I met with like two of them. They're both incredible. Maybe I can get one of them on. They were really nice.
Oh, that'd be great. We'll keep you all posted on that. Yeah.
The third and final thing that they say to be aware of in this Forbes article is that perfectionism reduces your effectiveness. And I think it's like directly correlated to the motivation, the willingness to make mistakes, yada, yada, yada. She says, another reason perfectionism is a barrier to your growth is because it reduces your ability to do brilliant work.
Love it.
If you're unable to move ahead or can't get anything done, you'll limit your ability to contribute to the project or earn your kudos for your great results. If you can't admit mistakes, you won't be able to learn, like the building blocks we talked about what's missing or what went wrong in order to improve. Striving to do great work for your career, but carried too far, you'll spin and stagnate, right?
Yeah, stagnate, yeah.
As you try fruitlessly to achieve unrealistic standards.
Yeah.
Fruitlessly. It's like, yeah. Good luck. You'll have nothing to show for it.
Have fun with that.
Mm-hmm. And then she says, like, you'll know when enough is enough and to be satisfied with delivering on a project where you, like, performed well. And I think this is, like, almost the breakthrough that we've had. It's like, all right, this is enough.
Good like, enough has to be good enough.
Enough is enough. Like, this is what I've got.
Yeah.
So rather than, like, wasting your time on trying to finish something perfectly on your own, like, you can just give it your all and give it your best and reach out for help. And that's how you're going to move forward. That's how you're going to progress. That's how you're going to get things done instead of letting perfectionism paralyze you.
Yeah, totally. And so we've talked a lot about, right, like, what perfectionism looks like in the workplace and, like, how to identify it. And we want to get to solutions. But we first want to talk about, like, how – maybe a little bit more illustrate more clearly how perfectionism shows up in addition to what we've just talked about. And one of the things that I love that I've done a couple times is the Gallup StrengthsFinder test. And I love it because I love learning about myself and also because, right? Yeah. And like learning how I work and why I work that way. But I also love it because the StrengthsFinder kind of forces you to battle against perfectionism a little bit, because perfectionism does not allow you to specialize.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't allow you to be good at certain things and to focus on those certain things, because it requires you to be good at everything and to fill every role in your life perfectly. And in the StrengthsFinder test, you take it, and of 34 strengths that they have, it gives you your top
five.
Yeah. And then your top 10, and then it like ranks all of them in order from 1 to 34. Which it's so funny because my top five are input, positivity, empathy, maximizer, and another one. But basically
strategy.
Yeah. Strategy is like, oh, maybe that was my number one. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm like, you're a really good strategist. Oh,
thank you. And so it gives you your top five, and then also breaks them into four categories. Mm-hmm. And so there's like executive, is a category, strategic or influencing is a category, relationships is a category, and
execution
was the first one that I'd said. There's another one. Wow, guys, sorry. We really should have had this pulled together. But it's these four categories. And I really just love it because you have to admit by taking this test that there are things you're better at than other things.
Can I share mine?
Yes, please.
Okay, so my finder results, my number one is positivity. Second is empathy. I'm an includer, a developer, and an arranger. And so what's funny is even sharing those, I'm like, By looking at my strengths and hearing Anna's, it's like, oh, but I'm not a strategist.
Yeah.
Why is that one not in my top five? It's like, it's literally not possible to have all 34 strengths in your top five. Like, that's not real.
But that's the thing. That perfectly illustrates how unrealistic perfectionism is, because it will tell you, well, you got to figure out a way to get 34 traits to be your top five traits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Literally. To be a master of all of them.
Yeah.
And I think perfectionism ends up turning you into the jack of all trades, but the master of none. Mm-hmm. It's like you're kind of just average at all of these things.
Yeah.
When you could actually just focus on being the master of something.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is four out of the five of my strengths fall under the category of relationships. Isn't that what it is? Or relationship building or something?
Yeah, relationship building.
So all of my strengths rely on relationship building and working with people and getting a team together. And so it's like, you know what? I'm not the greatest strategist. I'm not the greatest executor. Like, I'm not the best at all those other things. But I freaking rock at building relationships with people and getting a team together and like being positive and including everyone and arranging everyone and like delegating. And the arranging actually is in the execution category. So I do have one in another category.
Get up down.
But instead of like getting down on myself on all of those other things, it's like, okay, I can just run with this and I can just focus on being the star of that. And I'll let Anna be the star of strategy. You know, like, I don't have to expect myself to do that. I can lean on someone else to do that.
Mm-hmm. Which perfectionism hates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like, you should be able to do it on your own.
Yeah. Because I think three or four of my five fall in the influencing category, where it's like you want to maximize and like elevate things, whether it's for yourself or like for other people. And like strategy is like a big part of that. Mm-hmm. And so like, if you think about it, like together, there's so much more you and I can do together by focusing on our strengths with the relationship building on your end, strategy on my end, than I could do by myself trying to become an expert and perfect in all of those.
Right.
It literally doesn't make sense from an efficiency and effectiveness standpoint to try to be all of them, when you should just lean into your strengths, let others lean into theirs, and work as a team and trust each other and depend on each other.
Yes, absolutely.
Which you can't trust people if you have your shield up.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the whole point.
And I think when this comes to professional development, it's like, find your top five and maybe your top 10. Like, maybe take your top 10 and work on mastering those.
Yeah.
And then you can just sell yourself on that. And you know what? You could be like, you know what? I'm not the best at, what's one of the strengths we could say?
Woo. Is one, like winning people over.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not the best at wooing people, but I know how to like execute this, or I know
get shiz done.
I know like data super well.
Yeah.
Or I know like this, I know that. So it's like, just sell yourself on what you're great at and just do that, because that's you, and you can't be everything else. You can't be everything. So just do you. Work on those top 10, forget the other 24. You know, that you that didn't fall in the top 10, and just become the master of those.
Yeah. Which is so funny, because my top five are heavy the influencing category. I think of my top 10, it's like split between influencing and I think relationship building. Mm-hmm. My bottom one, my one that is the last, that I am the weakest in, is self-assurance. Isn't that funny? I know. I like, they gave us the report and I like read that and I was like,
tear.
Hilarious. Yeah. I was like, it's me mental health, eh?
That's interesting. Yeah. I can't remember what my bottom one was.
Oh, that's all right.
I just remember reading my top five and be like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah. And then my like one of my other like really low ones was competitiveness, which is true. If I sense competition, well.
So it's that you're not competitive?
Yeah.
Or that you're too competitive?
No, that I'm not competitive. It was like one of my lower strengths.
What?
Yeah. I kind of did. Like, if I sense there's like competition, I kind of like back up a little bit. I'm like, you guys can have it. I'm not like a very...
That surprises me.
In sports, I feel like I am. And like in Survivor, I have been.
Okay.
But like, I don't know, in like basically every other area, I'm just like not competitive. Anyway, that's neither here or there. Mm-hmm. But we had another, there was another article that I'd found.
You take this one away because Anna found this one.
That's called the B side of perfectionism, right? It's talking about the dark side of perfectionism, which mm-hmm. we love talking about, obviously. And it talks about how there's multiple people who are seen as experts, icons, legends in things that they've done who wanted to throw their work away while they were still alive, right? It's talking about people in the past. So like Virgil, it said that Virgil, before he died, asked for his, and oh my gosh, I can't remember how to say it, Aeneid, the effort he had worked on for 11 years to be burnt.
What is that? Who's Virgil?
He's like an author. He's an author.
Okay, I'm like, wait, I'm so freaking lost. Who the crap is Virgil? And what was he working on? I need more context.
So Virgil is a Roman poet.
Okay.
What is it called? Like the Aeneid, like not Odysseus, like Epidus, like all of the like great works, like the Greek and Roman works.
I'm literally so uncultured.
What are they called? It's, epic poetry.
Okay. Sounds dope. It's like Virgil.
I think that's what it's called. Anyway, so it's like renowned. Like people, like if you're in college, you usually will read like Oedipus or the Aeneid or things like that. No, but like anyway, and so he asked for that to be burnt before he died. And Emily Dickinson, the American poet, who's like a household name for poetry, asked her sister to burn all of her papers before she died. And like other literary greats such as Kafka, Nabokov, and Lord Byron made similar requests to people in their inner circle. They said, if I die, burn everything I've made. And which is crazy because now they're seen and they're held up as like the greats, right? They're held up as like this like high standard. And fortunately, their people didn't listen to them, obviously, because we have their works now. But the motive of these geniuses were always the same. Their works were not perfect, even though they have gone down in history as masterpieces. Mm-hmm. But because their works weren't perfect, they were like tortured by that. And they were like obsessed over it not being perfect. And it reveals the lesson that being a perfectionist at work can be a serious hindrance to you putting out beautiful things into the world. Mm-hmm. Think about how much worse the world would be, or maybe not even worse, but less beautiful if Emily Dickinson really had all of her poems burned. Or if Virgil really had
I'm screaming just because I don't know any of these people.
Can I put this into perspective?
Yes, yeah. Please.
Think the same thing when Taylor Swift gave away all of her masters. Right? All of her record, copyright, all of that.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Think if we never had that ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like that.
Or if Keeping Up with the Kardashians never happened.
Wow. Okay. I was way out of touch with what you need.
It's like this uncultured swine.
I was way out of touch with what you need.
No. I see what you're saying, though, where it's just like, especially something that's in the nature of like art or creation or just creating anything, because it's coming just like from you, even creating this podcast and putting out our opinions mm-hmm. or our feelings or something new out there is really vulnerable. And thinking like people could hate this.
Yeah.
This could be garbage. Like this should literally be burned.
They said, please burn it. Like, I don't want it to be attached to me. Yeah. And now it's like,
and now these people like are the greats and
they've
poetry.
Gone down in infamy. Yeah.
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 And the thing is like, even if they didn't, because there's a lot of poets that aren't like famous or aren't legends, like they still have made some form of like an influence, you know? And one show I love is Ink Masters. Obviously, I love reality TV. I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry. It just is what it is. Now, I'm just realizing this now in this episode, okay?
She's not like other girls.
I am, really. but Ink Masters is like a tattoo artist show. Mm. And I, like, these people are legit artists. It's like crazy. And in the finale, they had these like three finalists had to tattoo three different like art pieces. And my favorite tattooer, his name is Freddie, and he created out of all nine of those pieces from each of the finalists, he created both the most beautiful piece and the most hideous piece, which Whoa. Is interesting. Yeah. And he didn't win by like one vote, which was like devastating. Mm. And it was like a huge upset amongst the fans because they're like, dude, Freddie was the freaking winner.
Yeah.
Do you watch this, Ryan? Do you watch Ink Masters?
I do not. It is a new one that we want to start getting into, though.
Okay. Mm. Anyway, one of the judges who voted for him, she said, this is like, these people are artists and this person created the most, the pieces with the most like feeling and opinions behind it, which art creates like opinions and it starts its conversation. So she was like, how could we not all vote for him as artists, that he created the most polarizing piece and the most like unanimously gorgeous moving piece on someone? I just thought that was so interesting.
No, I love that. And I love that like he had to take the capacity to create something polarizing, right? Mm-hmm. But what some people maybe would call horrendous or like ugly, he had to use the same capacity to create that he did to create something beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you have to accept the risk of doing something badly in order to do something well. Mm-hmm. You have to. And perfectionism hates that, because the second you do something badly, it attaches that to your identity and says you are bad at that thing, yeah. Right?
And you should stop.
And you should stop, yeah, mm-hmm. before people find you out, or yeah. so you'll never do that again.
Yeah, you should never continue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's such a shame, because I truly believe that every time someone creates something, the world becomes more beautiful. Mm-hmm. Every time. And I just hate that perfectionism has robbed us of so many beautiful things from people. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, imperfect, flawed things from people.
Right.
Whether that's a painting or a comedy bit or mm-hmm. a poem or, you know, a tattoo, like whatever it is. I wish that we all would create more. Mm-hmm. And especially in the workplace, I wish we would create more. But we are so stifled and suffocated by perfectionism and by the fear of being found out and not looking perfect, that all of these things are just left unmade, uncreated. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad.
It is really sad. It's a darn shame.
It's friggin' a darn shame. A darn shame, yeah.
It is. Okay, so this next one is titled Perfectionism versus Professionalism, embracing a professionalism mindset. And professionalism is all about like maintaining an image, you know? It's like,
it's usually seen as that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're so professional.
Yeah. It's like, and what does that mean? Like, when you think of professional, what are like the first three words you think of? Ryan, you too.
Like, put together,
clean.
Clean. Nah, cool.
I just think of so like upright.
Yeah, and polished.
Like, polished. Yeah. Yeah. Ryan, do you have any more? I'm like, what do you think of?
I'm the opposite of this. I feel like it's language. Okay. I feel like it's language. It's dress. It's the way that they conduct themselves in the office, which is oxymoron because I do none of those things.
But so would you classify yourself as like unprofessional then?
No, I think that I think that my mindset is way more of, I do things my way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a more humble approach to it, at least I hope.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
So maybe perfectionism doesn't like hinder you in that way then, but it still does have this like very image thing, because it's like the way you dress, the way you speak, like there's an aura of like professionalism.
And professional looks a certain way, and mm-hmm. and if you don't fit that mold, then you're not professional. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think is what this author's trying to piece out, is that they actually are different. Is having a perfectionism mindset is different than having a professionalism mindset.
Same.
And
more.
That you actually can be that actually being professional is not being perfect, and like being mm-hmm. professional is like being authentic.
And I think it goes into like when you're trying to be perfect and you're being a perfectionist leader or employee or whatever, like you're not being honest.
Uh-huh.
Like it's genuinely not honest, and people like buy into authenticity. So I think that's interesting, that being more of a connectionist and dropping the perfectionist like image, or the perfectionist and professional thing that they're like tied together. Once you realize that it's actually not, then yeah. it can help boost your professionalism. I watched this YouTube video of like someone interviewing people chewing gum and then not chewing gum, and like how they viewed them.
Interesting.
And how they like perceived that person.
Yeah, I think I've seen the same thing too. It was very, very interesting.
Do you remember what they said?
I don't, but it like in the perspective of us putting this out here for the episode, it it surprised me when I watched it, but for us talking about it, it makes a lot of sense. If that makes any sense, like people with the perspective of people chewing gum, they're not going to choose them. They're going to find them unprofessional.
Mm-hmm. But what
no matter how qualified they were.
Yes. What I also said in the video, though, is they found them less threatening and more relatable and just like laid back.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? But yeah. I think that ties into this, that like perfectionism is not professionalism. Like it doesn't mean they're one and the same.
Yeah.
And so she helps us embrace this professionalism mindset instead of the perfectionist mindset through three things, right? Did she say three?
Yeah, three. Yep.
So the first one is letting go. And I think she talks about letting go of like these expectations, letting go of meeting like a perfect standard. Mm-hmm. And I think being more clear on expectations, because likely in a job, if you ask your employer, one thing I do in my meetings with my boss, at least once a month, so that I'm just like, hey, can we just touch base on like expectations? Like, is there anything that's not meeting this? Is there anything that's falling short? And as I've been going through like a difficult time with my mental health and Tony getting hurt and relationship things and yada, 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 I was like insecure that I wasn't meeting expectations. So I just asked her like, hey, are we good? Like, am I meeting expectations? Yeah. Like, do you hate me? Am I going to get fired? Like, that's how dramatic sometimes my mind can be because I feel like I'm failing that much. And she's like, no, you're doing great. Like, you're doing really, really awesome.
And you're like, but I'm not doing perfect. Mm-hmm. So like, could you just tell me you hate me? Because that's how my brain is working right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like in here, it talks about letting go of low stakes things. I have an amazing boss right now who I'm obsessed with. And she often talks about, this concept of 80% versus 20%. And she says, if something is going to make a project 20% better, is it worth 80% of your time to do it? Mm-hmm. And if a project is already 80% good, is it worth the time and energy to get it to 100 that you could be spending on another project? Mm-hmm. And we've been reading Extreme Ownership, an amazing book that I highly recommend to everyone. And it's about like Navy SEALs and mm-hmm. how they operate. And they talk in there about how you should be attentive to detail, but not obsessive. And perfectionism often requires you to be obsessive about detail and specifically imperfect detail. And so letting go of that, letting go of being obsessed with everything being perfect and having that control and being attentive to those things, right? Being aware of where your work might not be perfect or where you might be failing, right? Having those check-ins, but not being obsessed with it and not letting everything else in your life sit at the mercy of that.
Yeah. And she says specifically to practice letting go on low stakes projects. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some, like, your job can't all be high stakes projects. I mean, maybe.
I don't know, dude. Unless you're like the president of the United States.
Yeah. But just like identify little things and little projects where it's like, okay, I can let, not like you just give up, but it's like I can let loose a little bit on this one.
Yeah.
Like I can just give it what I've got and that's going to be good.
Let good enough be good enough.
Yeah. Practice that on low stakes jobs and it'll become easier to let go on situations where you don't have as much control, even when it comes to a high stake project, where then you can let go and not just like let it be, but maybe ask for help, which leads into her second suggestion, which is to remind yourself that your way is not the only way, which I love.
And is so hard.
And it is hard. It is really, really, really hard. She said, I had a misconception in my early days of leading that my way was the only way to accomplish something. In hindsight, I can't believe what a short-sighted view that was. The world is full of great ideas and mine are rarely the best ones. Remind yourself that your way is not the only way. In fact, it's quite opposite. The more you engage your team in thinking up new ideas, like allowing failure, allowing mistakes, allowing bad ideas, thinking up new ideas and allowing them to execute them, the better off everyone will be. So I love that one because then it allows people to like play on their strengths too. When we go to back to the Gallup Strengths Finder, it's like, hey, these are where mine lie. What is everyone else good at? And then we can all like excel together.
And we can all be teachable. Mm-hmm. And, I often think with this that one of the reasons people become perfectionists is because there were times or a time where you didn't have control over everything and things weren't done your way and then they failed and it reflected badly on you, right? And so it really comes from a space of wanting to protect yourself. And we talk a lot about how perfectionism tries to protect you from being abandoned, right? And appeasing to everyone so that people won't leave you, because we haven't learned how to cope with the feeling of being left. Right. We haven't learned how to cope with the feeling of not being chosen or people not sticking around. And so it's this whole concept of like, you have to let yourself be vulnerable enough to let go of control and let someone else try or consider mm-hmm. someone else's way mm-hmm. or someone else's method, and be okay with the possibility of things not going your way, things not going perfectly, because you let go of that control. And realizing that if and when that reflects badly on you, or if or when people leave you because of that, that it is okay. You are still you. Mm-hmm. You are still you, and like, you can still take a next step. Perfectionism doesn't allow for next steps, right? There's never a, we'll get them next time. It's always, what you did is final and permanent, and it's never going to change.
Oh, I had like one super awkward interaction with my gym owner once, and I was literally like, I can't come to this gym anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally need to go to a different gym. I might need to move out of state. I don't know. You know? It's just so funny, because it's like one misstep, one weird interaction, one like situation where you feel like exposed, you're done.
Yeah. And we don't think typically, and I'd hope most people are like this, like, we don't hold other people to that standard. If you were, if he was awkward to you one time, you wouldn't forever be like, he is an awkward person. No, and I would, he should like, oh, feel dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd be like, oh, we all are awkward.
And we can like laugh about it and move on.
Yeah. But for some reason we, right, it's that role reversal where when it's about us, mm-hmm. it is about us, and mm-hmm. it is permanent, and it is detrimental, and it is final.
Mm-hmm. And on this, last comment on this reminding yourself, advice or bit, I don't know the word I'm trying to look for.
Yeah.
The reminding yourself point that your way isn't always the best way. I think it's tricky when it comes to professional development, because it is such a competitive environment. Because when it comes to promotions or even positions that you're applying for or whatever it might be, it naturally is like a little bit of a competitive nature, because you want that. Like, you want that position, but so does someone else. And you want that recognition, but like, they do too. And so you're almost like fighting for that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I love how this actually helps your professional development and maintaining professionalism. It literally is about professionalism, that it builds your credibility, your effectiveness in the workplace, your ability to work with a team as a team, which is a very important skill to have as a leader. Like, the more that you practice this and you allow other, like, space for other people to shine, like, it's kind of nice, because then you don't really care that much about being competitive. Like, there's room for, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you to celebrate other people's successes too,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I there's this one quote from Elder Jeffrey R. Holland, a leader in the Church of Jesus Christ. And he says that, why do we have to down a quart of pickle juice anytime someone else has a blessing, anytime someone else has a promotion, anytime like something goes right for someone else, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, them getting that win doesn't like hurt you at all. There's always going to be other opportunities. There's always going to be other things. So in professional development, I think having more of like a collective mindset and being like about connection and about allowing space for other people to shine, it will help you as a professional.
Yes. Yeah. And not just in this like gimmicky, like hypothetical way, mm-hmm. like, it will literally help you
mm-hmm.
advance and develop more.
Yeah, for sure.
So their last point is to find you, which I really love this one, because I think this is very key to overcoming perfectionism in general, is self-discovery. Because the more that you discover yourself, the less you'll be afraid of the parts that aren't perfect, and the less you'll be afraid of, the darker parts of you, and, mm-hmm. and those parts that we use to cover with the shield. So a couple of points they have in here is, figure out what you're truly responsible for when you stop micromanaging others, which I am at fault for this. If I'm in charge of something or like over something, I really try not to micromanage, but I really do like have a vision for what I want it to be. And sometimes I push that ahead of other people's feelings sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so one of the most challenging parts of ridding yourself of a perfectionist tendency is figuring out what you'll do when you stop controlling everyone else. there's a lot of new leaders that struggle when they transition into new roles and responsibilities because they have to let go of their old ones and use the time that you would have spent micromanaging to dream up what's next for you. And self-discovery is really hard when you are a perfectionist because it requires you to discover parts of yourself that may not be very shiny or put together or flashy. Glamorous, yeah. And it also requires you to do things that you may not be good at. And so you're discovering, you know, you're going to go try things you've never done before. You're going to, you know, maybe you don't usually speak up in the Tuesday morning meeting, but you're going to, and you're going to give it a shot and see. And like, you're just discovering parts of you that you didn't know before because you've been hiding them from yourself too, not mm-hmm. just other people.
Right. No, I totally love that. And I think maybe it's getting like a little bit repetitive at this point, but like when you know your strengths and you know where you're not as strong, that is like finding yourself. That is discovering mm-hmm. yourself as a professional. And then it helps you moving forward because you don't have to pretend to be good at anything else. Like you don't have to pretend to be good at everything. When you find yourself, you're going to know where you're solid. You're going to know where you might have weak areas. And the more you know yourself, the bigger of an asset you're going to be because you can speak yes. to where you're a good addition. You can speak to where, you know, you might not be as effective.
Yeah. I always say that confidence, I always make the analogy between being confident is the same as like as knowing your product, right? Mm-hmm. Not that we ever want to view ourselves as objects that we're selling to people, but if you think of the best salesmen, they're the ones who can speak to what they're selling the most accurately and the For most sure. in depth. If I'm going to buy a vacuum, I want the person selling that to me to be able to answer all of my questions about it, especially the points where it's like, what kind of sucks about this vacuum? No pun intended.
Comedy queen. No, but you want them. You want them to know that product inside and out.
Yes, and if you're confident in yourself, a reason that you're confident in yourself is because you can speak to your own strengths and weaknesses. Mine tonight is talking.
There we go.
Got it. But you are aware of and can speak to those in depth, mm-hmm. and someone is much more willing to be sold on you. If you can speak to those rather than, right, I would never trust a guy trying to sell me something who when I'm like, oh, what like doesn't work super well about this product? And he's like, oh no, everything about this product is amazing. I'm like, dude, you're full you're of like, shits. Like, I'm not.
Bullshit.
Yeah. And so yeah. when you're trying to sell yourself to other people and be confident, you have to be aware of those dark parts and those light parts.
For sure.
And there's a quote that I saw on Instagram this week that the author is unknown, which is unfortunate. But it says, be gentle. You are meeting the part of yourself you have been at war with. And I think that's really powerful because we get very scared when we think about meeting these parts of ourselves that we've been trying to hide for so long or been at war with for so long, right? Like, I don't want to accept the fact that I sometimes am really awkward with people or that I sometimes can be, you know, a little bit arrogant or over self-assured or that I sometimes, you know, whatever it is, whatever weakness you have, like, you've been at war with that part of yourself for so long. So when you're finally going through this process of fighting back against perfectionism, be gentle with yourself because this is the part of you that you've been at war with mm-hmm. for years, for your whole life.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what part of yourself you've been at war with, maybe you've already befriended that part or you're not aware of that part yet. But I think when it comes to professional development, the sooner you learn like the enemy that's inside of you, the sooner you can befriend it and work with that and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for our takeaways.
I just sang it. Oh my gosh, that was your debut. It was so beautiful.
Did I rob you of it?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. Good. That was amazing.
I'm going to say takeaway number one is learning your strengths. Your like top 10 strengths or the strengths of you as a person, as a professional, and learn how to master those and let go of the things that you just might never be great at. Like you can still work on a little bit the things that maybe hinder you, the parts you're at war with, for example. But just know that you'll never be the master of everything.
Yeah.
Just be the master of your strengths and yeah. let that like propel you forward. That's takeaway number one.
Love it. I'd say takeaway number two is to let go.
Mm-hmm.
Let go of your way being the only way. Let go of people's perspectives of you or perceptions of you. Let go of trying to control everything. With this, I want to quote in Avengers Endgame, Thor's mom, when he goes back and like sees her.
Mm-hmm. When he's like fat and stuff.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Thor.
It's so good. And that's funny, right? That's your favorite version mm-hmm. of Thor. She tells him everyone fails at who they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so letting go of this image of what you should be, right? Don't should on yourself. And remember, everyone fails at who they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. There's not a single person you meet who has completely perfectly been who they were supposed to be or who they should be. And that helps. That brings a lot of oxygen back into my brain and my lungs when I think about that.
Right.
So just letting go of that, what you should be.
Right. Or right. Supposed I to love be. It. Takeaway number three, I'm going to say, have the courage to ask for feedback and have the courage to ask a leader or maybe someone you work with about your strengths or about your weaknesses and just say, hey, I'm working on professional development. Can I ask you some questions about blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
Like, and maybe even you could do it anonymous with them if you like send out a little survey, just like, hey team, I'm working on this. Could you provide me some feedback? And that takes a lot of bravery, but I think just like gaining awareness of how it feels to work with you and like be comfortable with getting that feedback and then moving it forward.
Love it. Yeah.
Do you have any last thoughts, comments?
No, just a rowdy amen to okay. what you said.
I'm going to quickly say, I think just the last one, number four, is like, don't think of it as much of a competitive thing. Like there's more room than you think at the top.
Yeah.
Like just have more of an abundance mindset and it's not trying to like cut the knees of your neighbor. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Okay. That's all. I think that's all.
Okay.
Thank you for listening.
We are so that glad that you're here.
That
was
criminal.
What? No, that was amazing. That was gorgeous. That was great. My name is Anna.
My name's Alicia.
And this is Popping Perfectionism.